Okay, it can only record up to 11 hours.
Okay.
Good morning, everybody. I'm very pleased to introduce Biplav Srivastava. Several of you probably know him from the time he used to loiter the hall here, maybe when he was in other building. He's done his PhD here, and he's been in various places. I think most recently he's been at IBM India Research Lab, and I think last year he's been at IBM Hawthorne Lab,
right.
Working with Richard Goodwin and his group. So he's going to be, he's done work in automated planning, I think during his dissertation time, but more recently he's been working on connections between planning and business informatics, and in particular web service composition. I just quickly looked at Google Scholar to see if they know whether he's alive, and a little workshop paper he wrote on directions, research directions in web service composition has about 185 citations since 2003. And the fact that all of you woke up and showed up shows that it's a pretty hot topic too. So he's going to tell us about whether or not there is any reality to the web service composition. Before I give the mic to him and he continues the talk, I should also mention that Rich Goodwin as well as Biplav are both going to be available for a forum, student forum at 1:30 in the same room here, where they can also talk about career in research labs, and I guess particularly with a wink and a nod to IBM research labs, because those are the best ones. So please do avail yourself of the opportunity. So without any further ado, I give you this love.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. So the first question I would want to ask is, how many people know about web services? Okay, thank you. And how many people know about web services composition? Okay, so this would tell me where to spend much of my talk. So here is the outline of my talk. What we are going to do is, first I'm going to introduce what are some of the business issues which companies have. And the reason this is very important is that in computer science we learn about the classic computer science areas, which is very important. But also we have to realize that computer science is in the service of something called the IT industry, and IT industry is in the service of businesses. Because in the reverse direction, money flows. Okay, so it is important to kind of look at what are some of the serious business problems today, and I would contextualize web services and web service composition. Why is it important with respect to some of the problems, and that also tells us where is the impact likely. Okay, then I should mention that 5 years back, about the same time, I talked about this topic here. Okay, so many things which have happened in the past 5 years, there have been myths in them and there have been reality in them. Okay, and I'm referring to some politics also. It starts with an I and a four-letter thing, but what I'm referring here is more in web services. I would try to give you a sense of what is the problem, but more importantly, where people originally thought was a problem, and it was so the myth part which I'm going to refer to is really in the scale up of composition, and how it could be solved by classical AI methods and so on, and what is really hindering people today. And so that would be the reality part, and what are some of the emerging trends. So this is what I hope to cover, and please do stop me if you have any pressing questions and so on. But otherwise, I'll go through any of the questions at the end. Thank you. So, some of the major issues which are being faced by businesses today, one of them is the business IT alignment. So, if you are a big company and you have to run your business, that's what you're concerned about. But of course, you are making IT investments. You have to have a website which goes into your marketing a budget or whatever, then you have to spend money in paying people, so like payroll, you have to do human resources management, you have to get suppliers, you have to produce and you have to sell things. So what people, the businesses are interested in, in knowing whether my investments in IT, they are supporting my business or they are completely orthogonal. Sometimes what also happens is the IT investments can be a competitive edge. So we might have heard about Dell and how good they have been in pushing the price down of building the computers, and they are still making money. So they have used IT in their competitive edge. So that's what, in the terms of business IT alignment, people are thinking about. Other thing is enterprise application integration. This problem has been there for a long time. What it means is that you, in a very big business, you have different systems. For example, talking to your suppliers. Second system you might have for managing sales and so on. So how can we integrate these things together? So for example, if you want to know about your customer and you want to refer to them, okay, I am IBM and one of my customers is ASU, I should be uniquely be able to talk about ASU. It's not like multiple representations of ASU and so on. The third problem is collaboration. In any organization, collaboration is a problem, but now it's a bigger problem because companies are actually diversifying. They are going globally, and yet you want people to collaborate. So if you are Sony and you are developing a new kind of electronic gadget, what chances are that your design will be happening somewhere, your testing will be happening somewhere, your market analysis will be happening somewhere else. How do you collaborate in this thing? Another business problem is asset reuse. So in terms of software reuse, we have heard for a long time, it's a perennial problem. But what businesses are also looking at is other kind of assets which they have, and can we actually reuse them. So for example, this is the simplest and the most trivial example, is if you're a company and you're making sales pitches, if you have a new customer, okay, can I actually make the sales pitch with respect to this customer in its particular industry based on what I have done in the past? Now, making a sales pitch for big projects is a non-trivial job, and people spend a lot of time. So can we actually do this asset reuse? So you may wonder why I'm talking about all kinds of business problems in a talk which is about web service composition. I will try to make relations to this, but I wanted to first contextualize the audience with respect to some of the business problems. Okay? So at the most basic level, web services, when we talk about it, it is seen as an example of service-oriented architecture. And what you have is you have service providers who have defined their interfaces, and they want people to invoke them, and that is how they are providing some functionality. Then there are service brokers or service registries in which those services are advertised. And then if there is a service requester who wants a particular kind of capability, what they would do is they can go to the service broker, they could discover who are the possible providers, one or multiple or aggregated set of providers who can give that functionality, and then you can go and you can invoke those services. So when we talk about web services, there is a specific standard we are referring to, which is the WSDL for advertisement and UDDI for search and discovery, and SOAP for actual invocation. But this picture remains similar if you're talking about any other SOA standard. So for our particular purpose, we'll be talking about web services, but which particular specification we are talking about won't change the content of the talk. So an important thing to kind of take notice is, what is a service? Okay, at one level of detail, it is a software module that you're talking about, and it can be about the instances which are advertised. Okay, so they're advertised in some registry, which is fine. Another one is entities which are deployed and they're running. So this one is very important, because what you have advertised, those services may not be available at runtime. So if you have depended on some service while you are building them up, and then you are trying to invoke them, it may not be available. So this is something which you have to be very mindful of. Okay. The third thing is, much of the web services standards and SOA standards, they have considered web services as instances. So instances which are available at some WSDL. Now what happens is, if you think about it from programming point of view, we know from object-oriented design and so on that a good way to have things is as collections, like you have classes and you have objects. You don't talk about programming with objects. And the reason is you want to change objects when at runtime or at other time because that particular object is not available. But in web services standards, this notion of type, has service type, has not been there. And this has led to much of the problems. So I just wanted to kind of bring out these three issues at the beginning, that when I'm talking about web services, important thing to note is whether this thing is happening at the advertisement time, whether it is happening at the deployment and the running time, or it is happening when talking about collection of services. So here is a very simple example of web service composition. What you have is, there is a requester, there is a registry which has a bunch of services. So example might be, I'm trying to make a trip to Phoenix from New York. Now since I am from, suppose there are three services, S1, S2, and S3. One is your flight booking, second one is hotel booking, and the third one is local transportation, and you can have other services in the registry. Now if I'm coming to Phoenix, and because I have been in Phoenix, maybe I have friends and I can stay with them. So a composition might be that, yeah, I need a flight and I need a local transportation, I probably don't need a hotel. So this kind of composition can come back from the registry. There's a composition module which might actually produce this kind of composition. So there was no single service which could have done the travel booking, which was really my goal, but with a subset of these services in a particular order, it can potentially meet my requirement. Now what we notice is, if you try to execute them, there are more issues. One way, if you're executing, is that you've taken your travel dates and so on, and it has come to the flight service. Now this information can go back to the requester, and then he can go and execute. He can invoke the local transportation service. However, that's not the only possibility. Another possibility could have been, in a smart execution system, is you invoke the flight system and it can directly pass the data to the local transportation system. There is a lot of benefits in doing this thing. Yes, please? Okay. So this could have directly passed the information to the S3, and the benefit would have been that if there is any change in S1 directly, so for example, if my dates have changed, it could very easily get propagated to the following local transportation service without me knowing it. So it's much more dynamic. So this brings out another notion, which is orchestration. And what you can have is, you can have centralized orchestration of the same composition, or you can have decentralized orchestration of that composition. Okay? So I have tried to give you an idea about web services, about the composition, and I've also tried to say that composition is not just stitching two services, but it is also about how you intend to execute them. So now the potential of web service composition depends on what do you think of as a service. If you're thinking of them as online deployed applications, from a business benefit point of view, okay, is that you are providing more collaboration. You are providing more data from different parts of your enterprise, for example, or different parts of the world. You, in some cases, it actually brings you new revenue opportunities. So as I'll show later in the example, what happens is, in telecommunication industry, it is being revolutionized right now because the voice revenue is not coming. So what they're doing is, they're opening up their networks, and you can now connect Google Map, you can connect location, which is a telecommunications service, and you can connect and you can build new kind of applications. Every time you use them, the money goes to the telco. So it is a new revenue opportunity. In terms of CS areas, which become very important, are user interfaces, visualization, streaming. Those kind of computer science areas become very important. Of course, I should say, everything is in addition to AI. Okay, I should put that. Now the second, if you think about services as IT systems, so by IT systems we can say it is software as well as hardware and the deployed services, and you can try to integrate them. Okay, so different departments having different systems and you're trying to integrate them. So you're solving the EI problem, and some of the computer science areas which become very important are metadata management, distributed systems, messaging, load balancing and things like that. If you talk about services as software components, then you have a shot at looking at the software reuse problem. And what has changed from the classical software reuse problem is that now the service specification is available independently and in some standard form than it was ever before. So this is very useful, and of course these are the related areas. Another thing is business processes. So a lot of effort goes into modeling organizations and how they are doing a particular work. So this actually helps in better business to IT alignment, and there are work in business processes and management metrics which are useful. This you may argue is in computer science or not, but that's besides the point. So I will now talk about a few case studies in which web service composition has been used and how it has been found useful, and then I'll talk about approaches, and then I'll talk about the other things. Okay, so I refer to the telecommunication industry, and this is a particular scenario that we did. We did web services composition with telecommunication. We actually did a pilot also. We had some very interesting observations and insights at the end of it. So what happens is, as I was saying, telcos, their revenue from voice is actually stagnant. So what they can do is, they can actually pair up with third-party providers, okay? So like, let's take Verizon. They can pair up with people like UPS, who actually give you orders. I mean, they can give you tracking information about packages and so on. And what they can do is, telcos can go to enterprises like, say, Sony, and say, Sony, you have an online site. You sell your TVs, and you get it shipped to places. What we will do is, if you have this interesting need for this interesting application, we can go and do it. And it will use our services, it will use third-party services, but here is the kind of value that you will have, and you can sell it off to your individual users. So what the telco gains is, it actually gains new revenue streams. And it has the services anyway in its system. It is allowing collaboration with its new party, third-party providers, and it can create new business. So in this particular case, what happens is telcos which already have investment in software infrastructure and IT infrastructure, they can do better ease of use and better utilization of already existing services. And the way they can do it is, you can use web services standards to wrap the IT various data sources and so on. And you can use semantic annotations to figure out how similar some things are. So for example, you can have tie-ups with Google Map, and you can also have with Yahoo Map, and so on. So we'll talk about that. So when the composition happens and when the execution happens, that changes from scenario to scenario. Yes. Coming back to your question here, actually in this particular situation, composition cannot really happen on fly, because telcos are very risk averse, that you may build an application and then it may just bring down their network. So they want a quality, they want a verification, validation thing, a step, and they are very concerned about that part. Okay, so this is a specific kind of example, and it appeared in one of our papers. What we did was, so imagine that there is Sony who sells television. And what the telco promises is, we'll build an application, and this might be of interest to you, where if there's a customer buys a TV, if he has a problem with the TV, they will go and they can get into the system, they can report the problem. Based on the severity of the problem, we'll look for experts and we'll look at the nature of the problem automatically. If it can be solved through remotely, we'll call it through a remote help desk, or we will send a person to you and then we will update information about what happened and so on. These are not services, these are service scenarios. So they can be internally, they can be compositions at multiple levels, okay, in each of these boxes. So this is a kind of like software building exercise, and you can do top-down composition, you can do bottom-up if you want to verify each scenario and then you want to build up the whole thing. And how would this be done today? Rather, before, if you look into web service composition thing, is that you would specify the end user capabilities, what do you want. You can select the service providers, okay. In this particular case, there would be lookup services and there would be database services and so on. You can design the flow and you can deploy the service. Now this information, there are multiple tools to do this. However, the problem is the world is changing. So you can, the most often thing is the network changes are happening, and because of that, whatever composition you have developed, it can become obsolete, it may become irrelevant. Other thing is that new service providers are coming and you want to use them. Finally, there can be new kinds of services. So you started with some service capabilities and then some additional enhancements were asked for. Now the rate of these changes, right, as I was doing, so network changes are more likely to be coming, new service providers are lesser likely to happen, and new service capabilities are even lesser likely to happen. But all these things can happen, and any of these changes happen, the network, the composition is going to be affected. So what we did in one of us, so the project that we worked on, what additional issues that we had was, it was about the scalability of this of the composition. So these web services, they could be, because they could be from multiple databases and so on, and you were trying to get third party providers, so number of services could become very large. You wanted to control the level of automation. You don't want complete automation because you want the human in the loop. The various kind of validations which need to be done. You wanted to model the domain information. Here it means that the modeling of the of billing, modeling of the user, modeling of routing, those kind of information had to be done. And the last one was you had to model industry practices. So for example, if a call gets dropped, there is a credit to your account which needs to be done. So those kind of things which you also need to model. So you have to keep, you have to account for these things or provide provisions for this in your composition solution. So this is the kind of architecture we came up with, and we called it Synthe, and information about that is available at one particular location. So the key components here was that we actually separated the composition problem, and this is again happening at design time. What's happening is you have the service specification, and we take the service description, but we give it in we use ontology semantic languages to describe the service capabilities. We try to use planning techniques, and we come up with a possible composition or compositions. Then since service here what we are doing is we are using services as software components, so they can have functional they can have functional requirements and they can have non-functional requirements. So we would use functional requirements, we would get the logical plan, so to say. Then what we would do is we will go to the registry and we would actually look for instances which would optimize our end-to-end non-functional things. So for example, we are looking for response time, throughput, and availability, and there are, these are like they interact with each other. So we actually would find the actual compositions and actual instances, and we would do it in a BPL with the information, with the actual binding information which can be executed. So we demonstrated this, we actually went and we showed this to telcos also, and they were interested in the composition. Now the issue that they had was about testing. So after you have done it, of course you have used planning algorithms and they would be correct by design, but there are other issues. How will we how will you ensure, how is the validation happening, especially at the registry level, and so on. How stable is the composition? So those kind of things, and that leads to new issues. So just to kind of bring out composition is not just stitching the plant here. The phases that you have to go is you have the service requirement in one specific semantic representation, OWLS. You have to do this web service requirement you have to gather, get the service discovery, service selection, and composition is happening here, then aggregation, and then deployment. So even developing the IDE, a development environment in which you can do and you can support the composition to the user, there are multiple people who are involved. So there is a service requester, there are service developers who can put it in the system, there are deployment engineers, you will have administrator for the IDE tools. So the bunch of requirements that are happening, what happens today is you may have just building the composition, building the initial composition is not enough, especially in this software environment. What you have to do is you have to support multiple people, and there are a number of tooling challenges, so which you have to account for. Okay, so I'll switch gears and I'll talk about online data aggregation, and this work was done by people from ISI, and it was 6 years back. Okay, so I'm still referring to it because this was a classical web services work, web services composition work, and here this was on travel. In travel, what's happening is, of course, there is a need for information. The domain is kind of restrictive because there are only a bunch of things which are possible. There are flight services, car services, airport services, weather services, and you know broadly the interrelationships. However, there are multiple choices, and you have to when you have one choice, then the other choices become redundant or more, or there are ways by which the choices are dependent to each other. So what they had done was they had, in a sense, built up the hierarchy of the relationships which are possible and how you would pick something. So for example, if you're trying to make a trip, and whether you are you're trying to monitor a previously done trip or you're trying to do a new trip, and there are modes of destination, and these are potential choices. So if you select something, others will become redundant. And so they could manage the constraints, and they could do the composition as well as execution. So they could really monitor what was the travel, if there was any changes, and they could control the whole thing. So it was quite successful. So this is an example of some new work that has happened, and I'm going to refer to. People might have heard about the term mashups, and everyone is gung-ho about mashups. So here what you're trying to do is you're trying to build online services, rather services with online content, and you are actually trying to do programming, visual programming. Now, since the number of choices are too many, you may want to actually have assistance for what are the possible ways in which you can do a particular mashup. And if you have done partially some mashup, you can actually, here are possible choices that you have. So I will go through a small demo about how the system works, and it will give you a sense of things. So what we are trying to do is we are trying to find a person's location, okay, and based on the person's location, we want to give him recommendation about all the pizza places which are nearby. Okay, this is like one of the most popular mashup scenarios, and there was no recommendation in the beginning. The person has these choices. Excuse me. Again, I should stop here. So what we have is, this particular gadget here, Blue Page, is actually an internal IBM service where you can know about a person, their email, and their information. Okay. So this was one service which was available, and the bunch of services. So if you know a person's email, So you can also know their location. So based on the location, there was a recommendation of all the possible services which actually can take addresses and can do something potentially useful for them. Okay.
Your point is that the blueprint service provides addresses for the outputs, and you're looking at all the things that you need addresses.
Yes, and not just not just single services, but they would might have actual plans attached with them and potential plans.
They can be macro services.
Exactly,
or
exactly,
services.
Exactly.
But all you're looking at is whether they can eat addresses.
Right.
Do something with them.
Richard?
Actually, it's more like, given what you have on the canvas, it has a repository of previous mashups that mashups that other people have made. And it's kind of, it's a recommendation system. So it says, given what you've done so far, what are the goals you're likely to achieve? So it's kind of like plan recognition, but it really does it based on conditional probabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Given that you've done this, or you have these things on Canvas, what's the conditional probability that you're likely going to want one of these outputs like this? And if you select that, you notice it added this Yahoo local search where it's going to look for pizza.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you whatever the most popular defaults are, right? But it also stuck in this Yahoo geocoding thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes your, this actually takes zip codes, I think. And that one has street addresses. So you have to go from the street addresses to use the geocoder to actually find out which zip code you're in. And it's something like that.
It's also more than just the pipe analysis. You're taking the context.
So you pick one output, and as a result, it had to add a couple of services and actually wire them up correctly. Because in order to actually suck out the address from the, it's an LDAP entry,
mm-hmm.
to actually suck it out, you need to know which fields to look at and how they're labeled. And address is called street and city in one, and it's called street address in the other. And so there's a bit of matching and mapping you have to do as well.
How do you resolve I think we pick the most likely one. So the thing is, you don't have to get it right. You just have to get close.
Because the user is that.
Yeah.
It's a recommended system.
But they always recommend, you know, you could be really interested in Harry Potter, but it recommends, you know, some other Potter as well. You just don't buy the book. So in this case, you could just, you know, even if it's recommended somebody put it on there, if it's not what you want, you just delete it.
So the user can think that he has, like,
oh, yeah. So, and if you notice now that it's done this, it's updated the recommendation because you accepted that one. So now it has more information about where you're going to go or what you might be interested in. So it's updated its recommendations, and now you could accept one of those. And so the idea is that it may actually be guessing your original goal based on what you've done so far, but it may also be suggesting related goals that you hadn't originally thought of, but would be interesting to add now that you know it. So, you know, if you pulled in, say, write a new service about, you know, business information, and you know, maybe a law firm to, you know, give you the CEO's bio, plot their horoscope or show you the stock price or other things. And you might have originally just went, oh, okay, I want to read an article about something, some company, I'm going to type in the stock number. And, oh, yeah, I can get the stock price, I can get the CEO's bio and various other things. Yeah, let me add those, since I can do it with just one click of the mouse.
Okay, sure. So it's actually what you can see is that it's much of the plan was already provided, and then it's actually stacking in various kind of parameters which might be needed. Okay. And so the default was like three answers you want. It can actually provide a input for five, and where to get the reply, it is actually going to provide that information. So in the intermediate, what the video is showing is it's going to show you the intermediate result also, so that you can verify. And so this is the kind of intermediate result that it got, and now you can provide the specific input? And this is the output of the mashup that you have created. So it provided you 5 answers, and you can actually go and change it, and you can get 10 answers as well. That's what the query is going to be changed now. Okay. So internally, what's happening is you have you can have a null mashup or a partial mashup, and there is a rankers system. There's a ranking system. There's a planner in the loop. There is a repository of there's a mashup repository. There is a manager who is managing the statistics, calculating the conditional probabilities, and there is a semantic matcher which is taking care of name ambiguities and is trying to resolve that. So what I've done is, and I spent more than half of my time, is trying to tell you about web services and various web services, actually illustration of web services composition and what is the potential impact that is possible. I will like to quickly introduce a framework that we have looked into for comparing web services composition and execution approaches, and this also kind of helps us in at a qualitative level analyzing what kind of approaches might work in different situations. So the way I kind of introduce what we have is, we have requirements, we have available capabilities. There can be events that can happen after you have done your composition, but before execution or during execution. There can also be templates or policies which you have to refer to, and as the output, the user is interested in the execution traces. And I should say that this kind of model that we're talking about, it actually is for stateless services. So now one question which comes up is, what is the basis for comparing them? And some of the basis could be, is the composition and execution, are they separable? Or they happen in lockstep? The other thing is, when does composition happen? Offline or online? Does the composition, are you using search, or is there a total guidance about how the composition would happen? So is there a template happening or not? What kind of information is available about the services? Do you know about the service types? Do you know about the service instances? Do you know about the services which are deployed and policies? And what kind of events happen on the fly, or they can happen gradually? So those kind of things. So some of the approaches which have been there in literature, they can be classified as interleaved approach, where what has happened is you are looking at only the deployed services. You have given the specific the requirements, and you can actually handle the events also, and you can do composition, you can do the execution. If there is a failure, you can do recomposition, but everything happens together, and the user can only observe the traces. And so some examples are given at the bottom. Another approach, and this is the most popular approach, is where the composition is monolithic. It happens offline, and then you pass it on to a runtime executor, and there it is supposed to be happening. And approaches like SWORD and SHOP2 and Meteor, they are following this approach. The approach that we talked about in Synthi, which was in the telecommunication example I showed, we actually followed a multi-stage approach, where what we are doing is, we are doing logical composition using the service types. Then we are doing physical composition, which are based on the deployed services. Then we are going on to the runtime. And what we also did in this work was, we've looked at what it means to pass multiple plans across the stages, and if there are failures, can we actually have feedbacks across the stages? So this could help us in composition as well as adaptation. And we were not the only ones. There was some other work on self-serve, which looked at the web services communities, but they were not very specific about the information, how it has to be modeled, and so on. So if you can do composition from scratch, then of course you can build templates for them. And this is what this slide is trying to show. if whatever is the approach by which you have done your composition previously, if you generalize them, you remove some constraints, you can build templates. And if you have built templates, what you can do is you can specialize in a new situation. And so this kind of approach has also been used, not meaning that all these composition by these approaches have been made into templates and done, but work, for example, by Meteores and so on, they have looked at monolithic compositions from before or by manually done, and can we generate templates and can we use them to specialize in new problems.
These are like generalized sort of schemas.
Exactly.
Corresponding to the previous, so it's like some sort of a gateway sort of
exactly.
Except you're generalizing the previous case.
Yeah.
Storing it as a template.
Yeah.
But is the generalization done manually or generalized?
Manually.
Manually.
Yeah. So going back to the basis, what we have is these four approaches, and the reason why kind of we classified them was interleaved, it was not separable, others were separable into stages, and what was happening at online or offline stage, and so on. How it was being, how the search was happening, what was information was it needing, and so on. So there are actually various trade-offs, and details of this, what I'm talking about, is in a paper. And so there are some very interesting points here. If you are looking for adaptation and you want adaptation during execution also, interleaved approach is very good, because if any event happens, you can actually go and you can change the composition on the fly. And the information that you need, it's very easy, because they're only interested in the deployed services. Monolithic approaches, they are good for some cases, okay. Staged approach, it is very good if you in reducing search in the composition effort. So it can be very scalable, because you are doing composition only with the logic at the logical level first, then at the physical level. So what you have done is you have broken the explosive search space into smaller parts. On the other hand, and it needs more information. You need more information modeling, and adaptation based on changes is lesser. Template-based approaches, they can be very nice. However, if your templates are wrong, then you can have incompleteness based on new situations. So what this model kind of helps us identify is, in cases like online information services, what kind of approaches are more likely or they are more relevant, and for enterprise application integration, what kind of approaches are more relevant. So in terms of the online scenario, we are seeing that examples which are more towards interleaved or template based, that is what people have tried. And in examples of EAI, what we have found in the literature, or what we feel is right, is the staged approach for number of characteristics. Okay, so that was about web services composition, and what I want to kind of talk about is how have the approaches that have been talked about in literature, they have progressed, and what's happening now. Okay, so best way is to track by references where the main or the most important papers have gotten published. So without saying that these are like completely representative of the work, completely exhaustive, they are representative of the work in the time frame. So around the first round of work was on setting up the composition problem and trying to solve with the PET techniques, whether it is by logic, by constraints, by planning. So these were some of the work that we looked at earlier. Then Yana and myself, we tried to make sense of this area and try to kind of say where are the open issues. And then we had some more work where semantics got into the picture. So people realized that information modeling is key, and the information that is available in WSDL is not sufficient. So there was integration of search with semantics, and that is what some of the work is representing. Even when you have represented ontologies, how do you introduce it with the web standards? That was another issue. So Richard and a bunch of people in Watson, what they looked at was an extension to WSDL, where semantic information could be put in the WSGL specification. So which was which has now become a W3's recommendation, W3C recommendation.
So but there is already semantic specifications before, but nobody was using them. So you are just trying to get them to put some extra information in WSGL, because things like DynaLS and all these others provide actual semantic.
But the tools for them, for handling them, are not available at that mass scale. So I mean, so the thing is, while you're thinking about composition, you have to also think about the runtime and the tooling aspect. So that is one key thing which I'm trying to mention. And WSGL was S was interesting from that point of view.
Right. It's a way of getting semantics in the back door.
That's yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
As
because
opposed
people
to try
are
to get
people
everybody
don't
to
sit and write. I mean, there is one aspect that I guess is coming through your talk too, which is there's a bunch of people who consider web service composition to be planning, but with even more complex operators and, you know, conditional plans with loops, etc., etc. There is the other end where, in fact, there is no specification available, and so you essentially, all you're doing is, I mean, the kind of work that you were just talking about the external project, where you are providing a system in a kind of a very light model, you know, like a very lightweight model. You know,
right. Okay. And so now, some of the trends which are trends in terms of the composition effort, there has been some very interesting work by Jörg Hoffman and Marco Pistori and so on, where what they are looking at is what are some of the composition scenarios which are actually quite tractable just by search itself. So they have come up with simple examples, and there was a paper in AAAI on this. What we are also seeing is that there are work in specific industries. So in telco, as I was telling you, the problem is not that there are not services. There are a lot of services. The problem is, once you get the services, how do you configure them? In telco, there are actually multiple standards. One is that you can do composition at the networking services level. You can do it at the application services level. So like at the with the location is at the network level, and Google and so on is at the application level. So how do you combine these services at different levels, and the information they're working with is different. So how do you work with them? So this is a paper which has come from my former group, and it appears in WDAV 2008. And there is also people are looking at adaptation. How can you do adaptation in the context of composition? Okay, so this is where I would try to justify that the myth and reality thing was valid in the title. So the myth really around 2003 time frame was that if you could resolve the scale-up issues and with the current planning methods or incremental extension to planning methods, the problem would be solved. And of course, the reason for that was that services, they are very much like actions, and you can have side effects, so you have precondition and effects, and you can, much of the existing methods, they actually do composition. Yes, there were many papers, and but what we find is that there were not many wide-scale systems. And to back up the claim of this myth, I would talk about the one planning system which I worked on. I actually developed in IBM Research, and so it's a family of Java planners, and there's information is available on the web. And we did the classical planning, the metric planning, contingent planning. In the Synthic, in the enterprise application integration, the planner we used was the contingent planner. In the Mashup Advisor, we were using the metric planner. So what an interesting thing which we found was, even though the methods were quite good in the planner, I was not tracking, or I was not trying to beat the latest planners in the planning competitions, and no one was complaining about the scalability. However, there were a number of extensions that were needed to integrate this planner with the external world. So whether it could be like the parameters that you need to tune the planner for the rest of the world, so we did some work on automatic parameter tuning. Another notion was that the plans could be available, but you don't need automated composition. So you wanted to analyze plans, what they are about, and you would want to provide additional information, and so on. And generating diverse plans, that was another thing which came up. So I'm kind of trying to say that generation of plan was very important. It's very important. However, how do you set up the problem was tended to be much more important. And we gave two examples. One was on enterprise application integration scenario. Another was on the mashup advisor. How you integrate with the rest of the world. So the reality is modeling the domain is very hard. Okay, and so the question is it really hard? If you tie yourself to monolithic systems, it's not hard. Like Windows, building an application on Windows is much easier. Because everything, what is a widget, what is a tool, what is a window, all the standards are very much there. Similarly, another company is SAP. I will be talking about some of its details here. So there also, modeling the information is much more easier. But in general, when you are actually trying to have IT systems across the different domains, modeling the information is harder. There are some standards emerging, but they're at different levels. Another question is, what is the right level of abstraction? What is the right level of service in a particular domain? It is a problem. Then handling runtime is an issue. So how do you prove that the composition that you're coming up with is correct? Okay. So if setting up the problem is hard, then validating, of course, has to be hard. And are there middleware that are available to execute whatever you are working with? And of course, the tooling issues are also important. So I don't know. I had some slides on emerging trends in resolving web service WC issues. Maybe I should. Yeah. So what's happening is I refer to SAP. I'm trying to give you a picture of is how some of the web services composition issues that are being faced today, how people are trying to address them. Okay, in a practical setting. So business process driven IT, this notion has been there for a long time, and the notion is that there's a technical level or the IT level where you'll be talking about machine, operating system, database setup, middleware, how you will be doing the processing of, say, payroll. And then there are higher level applications. For example, how do you hiring a person means doing all these bunch of transactions. So the various UIs and the business processes that you have. So you have processes at the top, and then you have the IT system, and they are trying to address the specific business feature that you want. So this was the kind of IT systems which are already there. There are packaged middleware companies. So there's SAP, there are Oracle, PeopleSoft. So this is the kind of architecture that they're proposing, and they have systems for this. IBM is in the business of customizing this for customers. So if people are not happy with whatever these package providers are providing, so we can build them. So what's happening today is we are having business process driven SOA. And this means that if you have a business process, so I want to create, so if I'm buying something, I want to create or process the purchase order, which might be there before. I want to release the purchase order, create a process, some other transaction, and so on. So this is how a company says I will do my work. ASU says I will get new computers for this department. Okay. So these business processes could be implemented by specific systems. And one may be SAP, another may be some third-party providers. It might be actually connected together. And so these are implementations of the specific business processes. Now, what's happening is people want to not be tied to any IT system. They want to change as time goes on because some vendor is not satisfying whatever you want. So this kind of flexibility you want. And this is leading to business process driven SOA. Now, in this particular context, what happens is if you have, you might have processes which are in different places. So SAP has business processes which they have talked to people, and they have defined that this is good for universities, this is good for this kind of industry, and so on. This is the value add that SAP brings in. And similarly, Oracle has tried to do something. Can we reuse business processes from there? IBM has also tried to build some repository of business processes that we have seen in some customers. The problem is, for a new engagement, if we are trying to build a business process and do the IT implementation, can we reuse information from there, and can we reuse the implementations from places? So in this particular case, what you have is things like reuse business processes, reuse the service implementations, and I don't know if you see the connection to planning, but you have compositions and you want to reuse them and you want to create new compositions. And the information is available in terms of the higher level business processes. Okay, so that's one emerging trend where composition is needed, but you don't have the full models of the actions. Another one is on model-led planning, and since Rao has been talking about it, I don't know I need to talk anything here. Let me say just that the challenges here are, how do you help human planners when the information is incomplete? That's one category of work. Another category of work is, can the planner themselves deal with the incompleteness? And the third category of work is, can you help provide techniques to complete the model itself which was incomplete? So this is the general kind of challenges which Rao has been talking about, and I don't have to go more. So in summary, what I did was I talked about IT issues faced by businesses today. I talked about why web service composition is very important. I tried to look at the progress in automated web service composition, and the myth really was that you have to look at the scale-up issues in composition. The reality is the setup of the composition and what you do with the composition, that needs to be addressed. And the emerging trends is that plan reuse and modification techniques are quite important. And all if there are richer but unstructured domain models, higher models, and you can also have be doing planning in the presence of incomplete or impoverished domain models. And finally, one of the issues which we have not talked about today, but it is very important, is adaptation in this setting. And I have some material as backup, so if I'm giving the slides, it will be available. Thank you. Yes, question.
So, talking about this shallow domain model, could you give some example of what are these shallow domain, what do you mean by shallow domain?
Okay, so what I mean by deep domain models, let me first explain that. So if you know exactly about the side effects, about the precondition and effects a particular service can cause. So if there is a service, so service is referring to some entity in the world, right? It's going to have some behavior. So whatever are the side effects, what are the exactly all the things that that service can cause, if you have information about that, that is what I mean by deep model. Shallow model becomes if you don't have this full information. Now, giving a concrete example, if someone has developed a sorting algorithm and I'm going to use it, if they can explain me the sorting algorithm and giving just the information that there is a set of integers and output is just a set of integers, that's not useful. It tells me about some functions, but there are thousands of functions in the world which do the same thing. Set of ints and set of ints as output. If you give me some more information that the constraints on the output, there's no constraint on the input, but the constraints on the output is that any pairwise, they should have a less than relationship. So that is fully constraining and giving me the deeper model. So this is, so what's happening is when we talk about deeper models and shallow models, typically what's happening is doing the shallow model is easy. People have written programs and the parameter types, right, they are very easily available. But what change they're doing in the world, it's very difficult to figure out. In fact, I take the sorting algorithm, I tell you that its output is going to be AI less than AJ, but how do you validate that this is what the program is going to do? To be completely sure that this is what the program is going to do, you have to understand the source code. So, suppose that you don't want to understand it, then a higher level of deep domain model is that you just have the constraints about what the output is expecting, and you hope that the implementation has been done correctly. Yeah.
We haven't got to it. We are taken all the vector composition is very important. I would actually ask, are vectors really important? I mean, going back to this myth issue.
Right.
Yes, there's a lot of total service-oriented architecture. There's a lot of stuff on thought there is a service and whatnot. But, I mean, web service seems to be just basically an interface issue. I mean, because
yes.
there are a lot of the things that you were talking about, semantic mashup. I mean, they are there even if you do web services or data management, data integration, and other things.
Right.
So is the problem really the web services, or is it just basically service composition and software as a service, data as a service problem?
So actually, in everything that I talked about, web service was just a reference to services, SOA. And the only difference was that I was talking about a specific kind of standard, just to concretize the discussion. But the implementation could have been completely different. The standards could have been completely different. We could have talked about CORBA messages, for example, and everything would have remained the same. The only difference here from classic client-server and so on is that the interface's description is available away from the provider. So why this is important is, number one, earlier providers could just not document their outputs or inputs, right? And you are supposed to still understand them. But if you are going to be available in a registry, it better be in a form that someone can discover. So that's why it is important. The second thing is, now, once it is available, anyone can go and check it. So this flexibility, why the service interfaces has been put into a registry, I think that is the most crucial part of the whole
system.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. You're correct. Yeah.
But I mean, it's also the same issue in data integration, right?
Yeah.
I mean, federated databases to web data integration. There are certain things that are different, though, because I guess however big the enterprise is, you think that there's some controllability, you could actually buy PX, say certain standards that be followed. Whereas,
well, but no, it doesn't work that way. And also there's the issue of the time that it takes and the computation that it involves. Many times, actually, it turns out that these components are not. I mean, if you are really going to integrate in something with some other part of your enterprise or some other business, although you are not using, let's say, the web service technology, you are actually seeing almost like a black box.
Yeah.
So which means that basically all this. I mean, so you are actually trying to solve many of the problems that you basically were trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although it's not web service.
Right. Absolutely correct. So the service orientation of the system is more important than the specific standard. All right. You have a question, right?
I just wanted to ask, if then you want to do the composition planning, but how do you verify that the service planning is a valid workflow? When you want to run something, you just do some planning, but you want to make sure they can work. But how do you verify them? Is there any
So there is a simple answer and there is a harder answer. The simpler answer is, if all the assumptions about classical planning, right, they hold when you set up the problem. So any standard planning algorithm says that I'm sound and complete. Soundness means that I will actually take you to the result that you want, and because it has proved in so. So that is one part. But on the other hand, what I was saying here, and which is the harder problem, is from web services point of view, composition is happening at one time, execution is happening at other times, there are external events which may happen, and validation is really a issue. So from a practical point of view, it's a real issue, and there are people have worked on validation on plan correctness in general, but how it should be done in web services context, right? I would say it's an open problem.
So, when you do the planning, when you want to make sure something is correct, do you have to run this in the runtime to make sure it can work, or you can have some other solutions?
Depends. Okay. So the thing is, if you have the control over the world and you know new factors are not coming in, then you can of course validate at the design time whenever you build the plan, and you can correct, I mean you can verify it. But if it is actually changing in the real world, then there is no way for you to know. So the thing is, okay, let me take a step back. If the world, if you have built up a plan and you have no idea about how the world will be performing, right, so the bets are off. But if you have a good model of how the world is going to perform, so once when you generated the plan, you can use that model of how the world is performing and you can validate with respect to that.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I'm answering the question or not, but the answer really depends. So it depends on the kind of information you have about the input problem and also about the execution environment. Yeah, hi. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, the only thing which makes in the systems that we talked about, right, the only thing which makes it domain specific is, for example, the ontology that I was referring to. Okay. Other than that, all the methods were domain independent.
But if you only look at the structure, as a pattern, such as the sequential or parallel, or something like that, is there some similarity in the difference when you do composition?
I think there are better people to answer this, but this is a general learning problem, and in learning, how have you extracted model from one particular problem instance, and how can you transfer that information across to another one, is transfer learning and so on, is kind of known problem area. So my guess is yes. And but in terms of web services composition, have people looked at it? I'm not aware of it.
So basically, all the web services are considered domain specific.
No, they're not domain specific. The domain specific part only is to the extent of the domain ontology they might be using, but the method would just work. So for example, the synthesis system that I showed, the only domain specific, the telco specific thing was the services which are there in the system and the semantic annotations which were there. So if I have a whole bunch of services from bioinformatics and I have the bio ontology, the thing would have worked.
The method,
yes, exactly. In fact, much of the planning methods that we talked about were all domain independent. We didn't talk about any domain specific one. Yeah, right.
Yeah, regarding the interface information management, whether the dynamic sum of the environment is typically much less than a web-based offline, because guarantees might be, requirements might, quality of the requirements might be high. Is it, especially the runtime composition, is it really as applicable or as, is it like, or is it really, people, is it required?
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
I'm talking especially about the interface information management.
Okay.
Runtime composition is really applicable as much as in the web scenario, but the dynamic is much more, and the quality of service guarantees requirements are much less. For example, you said for telco, it's not applicable because they want it more deterministic or more.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
Is there a real environment where we can apply these kinds of dynamic composition?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, for example, online data sources, right? We should have dynamic nature here. So for example, I already have a plan of visiting Phoenix, and I have my flight and everything.
I'm asking specifically in context to interface information management. Well, I don't have any, I can see there are...
Right. So in the same example, suppose Travelocity has done all my arrangements,
okay,
or American Express has done all the arrangements, right? If there is any change anywhere, it should go and it should propagate everyone, inform everyone, and of course the data is managed by MX, American Express, so they need to provide this service. So it is very important for them. If can they provide it versus someone who cannot provide it, it can become a key differentiator.
Yeah, if I understand correctly, these kinds of this is more important when there is a higher degree of dynamism in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it is likely to decrease the quality of service also, since there will be probabilities involved.
Correct.
Would that be acceptable really
I think the answer is whether it is transaction oriented system versus non transaction oriented system, but it depends.
You don't want like real time adaptation if somebody's updating your bank account or so it's certain you have to take risk in reliability, you need to know the things in your account. But if you're doing situational apps and it's something you're just doing for your own purposes, it's probably a lot lower level required, so you do more dynamic things as opposed to something that's processing your orders and has to work or stuff doesn't get there.
Again, a reminder that at 1:30,
yes.
Both Vislav and you should be available for more general discussions as well as if you have additional questions on this stuff. So,
definitely, yeah.
Then, thank you again, Vislav.
Thank you.
Vish.
Thank you.
Can you get a slide of your.
Yeah, I'll actually give it to Professor Rao.